Thanks. I'm Leonard Wool, by the way, and I'm a consultant in information management with an interest in libraries, archives and museums. Conrad sprung this on me this morning, so I haven't prepared anything. I haven't got any pretty pictures. But I'll just say briefly a few of the principles that I see involved in devising subject indexing schemes. I may say that I'm also a member of a working party of the British Standards Institution putting together a new standard, BS8723, for controlled vocabularies for information retrieval, or structured vocabularies for information retrieval, I think we'll call it. And that is really going to replace the previous one dealing with monolingual and multilingual vocabulary. So I refer you to that for more detailed information on some of the topics I want to mention. I also, there's a paper that I gave last year, which is on the CD here. I don't know if the slides that accompany that are on the CD. I don't think they are, but they're probably on the KIDM website. So if you listen to this presentation on the CD, look at the slides on the website as well in order to make sense of it. Right, I'll just say a few points about subject indexing generally, which is my main interest. The first thing to say is the distinction to be made between description and access points, because this is something that libraries have often talked about in the past, but tends to get a bit muddled when you talk about Dublin Core. You don't know whether you're actually describing a document, providing a what they call a document surrogate, or whether you're providing points by which you can access and find it. When you found it, when you find a list of documents, you then get some information presented which allows you to assess them and decide whether they're relevant or not. And there is a distinction to be made between the structured form of data that you need in order to provide consistent indexing and the information which is presented once you've found it, which can be in free text and where you can read things in any language at all about the document. People get worried about having to use a controlled vocabulary because they say that you're using an unnatural term and you're not using the words which come naturally to what people think. But those terms can go into the description of the document once they've retrieved it. The point about controlled vocabulary is that you have consistency in indexing so that there's a better chance of matching the terms used by a searcher with the terms which will be used by an indexer. We talked earlier today about concepts for subject access, and the first stage, in fact, before if we're not doing automatic indexing, is to do what we call subject analysis, which is actually to decide what a document is about. And this occurs before you look at a controlled vocabulary or anything. You read the document. I'm talking now about human indexing, intellectual indexing, rather than computerized indexing, where the human has actually got to look at it and decide what the subject of it is. Then, having identified the concepts represented in the document, translate those into the controlled vocabulary which is used to label those documents. In a controlled vocabulary, we define concepts and label them by giving them a preferred term. And we also give them other non-preferred terms as well. The preferred term that we choose to use as an indexing label is to some extent arbitrary. We choose the one which is going to be most commonly sought, but it should be equally possible to access it by any of the non-preferred terms as well. The actual definition of the scope of the concept is best expressed in a scope note, which actually says what the concept means. And it's that scope note that defines the concept rather than just the label. We don't assume that people intuitively know what the label means. The scope note should actually define the concept, say what it includes and what it excluded, what is to be considered as another concept indexed elsewhere under a different label. Normally we label concepts by plural nouns rather than adjectives, although there's a distinction here between what we call count nouns, things you say how many there are, we label them as plural. So we talk about microphones, we talk about non-count terms as being things like water or air as singulars. There's a lot of discussion about this, and the museum people get upset because they like to think that we're talking about a chair, and that is a chair, and we're labelling it as a chair, but we are talking in indexing terms about labelling a class, as somebody said this morning, and we're talking about the class or category of chairs, and that's the class is better labelled by the plural. We talked this morning about disambiguation, so I'll not go into that anymore just now, apart from saying you put these parenthetical qualifiers after a term in order to distinguish between banks, which are financial institutions, and banks, which are bits of rivers and so on. Having decided what concepts are going to go into a controlled vocabulary, they can be grouped in various ways. And I like to think of these as building blocks, where the concepts can be labelled separately and listed in a thesaurus with their relations between them specified. The relations that go into a thesaurus are what we call paradigmatic relationships. In other words, the ones which are true in any context, so that you can have computers, you can have magnetic tapes, computer data, you can have databases, are all related to computers, and you can put relationships between these in the thesaurus. You can put broader, narrower term relationships between computers and mini-computers, computers and digital computers, computers and analog computers, are all broader, narrower term relationships, the is-a relationship. It's not the job of a thesaurus to link terms like computers and banking, because those are not inherent in the concepts themselves. You may well have a document which deals with computers and banking, and in that case we say that the relationship is syntagmatic. In other words, the two terms come together in syntax in order to express that compound concept of computer applications in banking. Those are two different concepts which have been brought together to form a compound. In a thesaurus we can equally well show this. We can have an entry term for computer banking, but we may well decide not to retain this as a preferred term in the thesaurus, but to make it a non-preferred term, saying computer banking use computers and banking. So use the two terms are assigned separately to the document in order to express that compound concept. This is not really pre-coordination. It's expressing a compound term, but we wouldn't call that pre-coordination. In a thesaurus, you don't really have pre-coordination. You may have compounds of that kind. But in a classification scheme, certainly you do. You can have, in a classification scheme, we build things using concepts which come from different parts of the thesaurus, different facets, if you like. And I must say the word facet is one which I find is often misused because it's a fashionable term, like taxonomy. I don't like that term either, actually, because I think taxonomy is used by people who don't know whether it's a classification or a thesaurus. It's a nice general term and a bit woolly. Best leave taxonomy to the biologists, in my opinion, although that's not an official BSI statement. facet. We have defined in the British Standard as being what's sometimes called a fundamental facet. In other words, it's a particular category, such as objects, organisms, materials, actions, places, times, and so on, which are mutually exclusive. Something cannot be an action and an object at the same time. So we have different facets of that kind which are mutually exclusive and can be so expressed in a thesaurus. You can only have broader, narrower is-a relationships between terms within the same facet. In a classification, we can combine facets together. So we can combine things like banking as an activity and computers as objects, and you can combine them to express a compound. When you combine facets to create compounds in a classification, you have to decide to do it in a way which is going to be consistent. And for those, we have a citation order. We decide what the sequence of facets is going to be. I'm a member of the classification research group, which has been going for at least 50 years, and a lot of its principles are still perfectly valid nowadays, although not as widely known as it would be useful if they were. And it came up with a citation order of facets, beginning with things like things, kinds of things, actions, agents, patients, which is the thing operated on, and so on, ending up with place and time. This is an elaboration of Ranganathan, who's the father of faceted classification. He had a formula of PMEST, for personality, matter, energy, space, time, as a citation order of facets. So because you have this laid down order in which you combine facets. It means that you decide whether you put all the things on tonsils together and follow them by applications, things like diseases of tonsils, operations on tonsils, and pictures of tonsils, or whether you put all the operations together, everything you use a laser for in surgery might come together, and you have lasers for tonsils, lasers for moles, lasers for eyes, and so on. Do you put the tool first, or do you put the part of the body first? The facet order is not immutable, but it has to be decided and applied consistently with any particular scheme. Because a classification scheme doesn't bring things together just alphabetically, it's often necessary to have a notation, which is what Conrad has applied to the British BCS scheme here, a symbolic notation which allows you to sort things in a systematic order and maintain that systematic order. Otherwise, because you've got animals coming at the beginning of the alphabet and zoos coming at the end, they are related and expect to find them coming reasonably close together. A classification we have in fact defined as being not something which has a notation necessarily. The inherent aspect of a classification is that it brings related subjects together as closely as possible, and obviously there are different ways in which things can be related, and it arranges these things in a systematic order so that you can browse easily through a collection of resources. And this brings me to the final thing, which is the difference between the applications of a thesaurus approach and a classified approach. A thesaurus approach lets you find things specifically by particular terms and lets you do post-coordinate searching. Post and pre-coordinate apply to the indexing point, so that something which is used for post-coordinate searching means that you combine terms or combine concepts after indexing. They're combined at the search time. Pre-coordinate means that they're combined at the time of indexing into a compound string. Finally, the point of using a classification is that you can browse sensibly. It's a great pity, as far as I'm concerned, that our library systems nowadays have not really given us an adequate replacement for the classified catalogue, which you used to find on cards. You can no longer browse easily in a classified sequence and see related things brought together, because they don't, and well guided, which lets you see, work your way through it. You can get to one point in the classification scheme and browse up and down and find related things nearby. Classification schemes allow for this kind of useful browsing, and thesaurus is useful for searching, so the two are complementary and not alternative. You don't have one or the other. It's best if you have both. The user interface for a scheme of that kind is also important, and far too often we see user interfaces which give you a tiny little box and say, type your question here, without any guidance on what you can do. Even the advanced interfaces that we have often don't really give you any sufficient guidance on how to compile a sensible search statement. I think what was said earlier this morning about the need for information literacy, and it could be helped a lot if we had interfaces which did a bit more unobtrusive tutorial teaching and leading an inquirer through the steps necessary in order to refine their query. Well, Google says, did you mean? And a thesaurus could do you more than that. It could say, yes, I've got this, but I index it under this other term. I'll do the search on that instead. Or, you've searched for this. Would you also be interested in searching for the following related terms? Do you want to explode this concept to include in your search all its narrower concepts? This kind of work, which librarians call the reference interview, when somebody comes and says, where are the chemistry books, please? Because what they want, in fact, is to find out whether the weed killer they've put on their down their drain is going to do any damage. People generally are thought to ask for topics which are broader than they really want, because they're frightened to be too specific. The search interface should allow them to lead them through that in the kind of reference interview. The computer can do it, but the systems that we have at present don't. We've got lots of possibilities of that kind. I've just raised a few of them, and I hope that we can develop our systems a little bit more to recover some of the principles that were developed in the past.
Well, thank you, Emma. That's very good. Thank you very much.